Andy? Are you awake? Your eyes are open. Do you hear me? It's Grandpop.
Is that my ice cream truck?
I thought you were more awake than you were letting on. You were certainly groggy last time I looked in.
You said this wasn't going to hurt.
No, I said you'd be sore. Well, this will be the worst of it. Do you want some ice cream?
I couldn't. And you told me I could eat as much as I want. You never told me I wouldn't be able to.
Well, truthfully, that is the cruel joke every generation plays on the next. You can do it to yours.
Please.
Please. All right, now let's remember where we are in the story. Grandfather Mouse, Andy, Uncle Bobo, and Eeky are all fleeing the church because of the snake inside, right? And there they are, escaping by stowing away.
Ice, please.
Here you are. Remember, if you chew, you swallow. So just trickle it. Andy, listen to me. Try to listen to me. Do you hear a foghorn? I think I hear one. You have better ears than me. Listen, is it there? No? No? Well, there may soon be one. I know it's getting foggier out, so one may be starting up. Now you tell me if you hear it. And meanwhile, I'll read, okay? Now, the baskets Grandfather Mouse was referring to were part of a Christmas tradition at St. Andrews by the Sea called 11 Christmas Baskets. Each year, 11 colorful gift baskets were made up by the church and given out anonymously around the community on Christmas Eve. The minister and selected volunteers would assemble very late to pick up their assignments and deliver them to the front stoops and back porches of homes around the township. Grandfather Mouse continued, "When the humans come to get the baskets, we'll hitch rides on their undersides. We'll ride them out like they were gondolas of hot air balloons, up and over and across the floor and out the front door. Then, once we're outside, we drop off in the darkness, unseen. That's the surest way we can make our escape. Now, as I say, in about an hour they'll show, so I suggest until then we gather some provisions and get some rest to be ready when the time comes." Grandfather Mouse turned to his grandson and said, "Andy, do you think you can take that cloak your mother felted you and turn it into a knapsack pouch? Fold it in half and felt up its ends? Something like that? Think you can?"
"I'll try."
"Good. While you do that, I'll gather up as much foodstuffs as I think you should carry. Enough, but not too much. You still need to be nimble as you go." He turned to Eeky and Bobo. "I suggest you two do the same." Said two then proceeded to perform their version of Grandfather's suggestion by stuffing themselves with as much foodstuffs as possible. Just then they heard the sounds of cars pulling up outside. The gloom of the church was illuminated by headlights sweeping across the stained glass windows, bright cones of conical light looking like spotlights on opening night.
"Humans," Grandfather whispered, "hurry, get your cloak. Meet me at the poinsettias."
Up front, just inside the altar railing, a colorful row of Christmas baskets was lined up like airplanes on the tarmac. The handles of the baskets were prettily adorned by ribbons and sprigs of balsam, and flanking the baskets were two rows of red poinsettia pots, providing excellent cover for the mice, but also excellent concealment for the serpent, should it be lurking there. However, luck was in attendance. The snake was not. So, when the humans came forward to accept their assignments, a would-be stowaway mouse stood waiting by each of the first four baskets in the row, ready to leap up and snag on as the basket rose. The first basket went up with Bobo aboard, clinging by all fours to its bottom. The second one took off and included Eeky as its secret stowaway. As the third basket lifted, Grandfather jumped on. Then Andy leapt for the fourth. Quickly he looked forward to see how his grandfather was getting on and saw, in terms of physical strength, his grandfather's eyes had been much bigger than his stomach. His grip quickly slipped, and seconds after the basket was lifted, he fell back down among the poinsettias. Seeing this, Andy quickly let go too and dropped. Then quickly ensued a frantic argument over who should go first in the next attempt. Grandfather said, "You!" Andy said, "Go!" Meanwhile, more baskets were leaving the station. Basket 6, and basket 7, basket 8, basket 9. Now there were only 2 left. Grandfather at last buckled, grabbing for 10, while the white mouse leapt on to 11. The first thing that Andy did was sink his nails into the soft wood strapping. Then, looking ahead at what was happening, he saw his grandfather was slipping. He fell. Instinctively, Andy let go with his forepaws and swung upside down like the Jungle Gym kid on the playground. He used his tiny claws like grappling hooks to swipe for his grandpa, and the swiping took. He snatched the old mouse by the fur of his ruff. Then, one mouse suspended and the other upended, off they went, precarious stowaway mice dangling like a pair of fuzzy dice from a rearview mirror. They sailed over railings and furniture, floating up to the church house door where the minister is waiting, sending each volunteer off with a Christmas blessing. The passenger mice that were harboring below began to be concerned that their pilots were lingering too long and not heading for the parking lot, where the deeper shadows cast by the church would assist them in dropping off unseen. While the humans were taking in the view, upside down Andy was experiencing a powerful deja vu. Hanging by his toes, with blood draining to his face, he began to feel the same way he did dangling upside down beneath Matilda the bride's wedding gown. At last, the lollygagging Good Samaritans began moving off, their footsteps sounding across the uneven and snowy terrain, in some places soft, other places crisp, like they were marching on layers of styrofoam cups. Up ahead, Andy could see that Uncle Bobo had already dropped off. Eeky was dropping too. He decided that now was probably as good a time as any. With his eyes looking down, he asked the question, and his grandfather nodded back. Andy let go, and Grandfather plummeted like the proverbial stone and disappeared completely in a soft pillow of snow. Andy, who was next, said, "Bombs away!" as he let go, only to discover, what, eh? Oh, no! His toenails were dug in too deep to the strapping, and the stubborn Christmas basket wouldn't let go. Andy finds himself stuck to the bottom strapping of the Christmas basket he is hitching a ride on. He is in imminent danger of ending up in somebody's trunk or back seat, so the first thing he does is deep-six his knapsack, shrugging it off similar to the way Houdini would wriggle his way out of straitjackets, untangles, and lets it drop. Freed from its weight, he immediately bends from the waist, performing an upside-down sit-up to bring his nose up level with his toes. Savagely, he attacks his toes, treating them as if they weren't even his. He yanks. He yanks. He pulls. One by one, they let go. That's the good news. But the bad news is the trudging steps have stopped. A trunk lid has popped, and he feels his basket being lifted in. With a Herculean effort, he pulls on the last toe like a ripcord, and an instant later, he is toppling downward through space. He doesn't topple far before he bounces off the rear bumper of a car, and by luck of a lucky star, bounces outside the trunk and not in. On the ground, he sprints for the nearest cover, which is beneath the metal undercarriage that hovers overhead. Huddling in the shadow of a big black rubber donut, he hears ka-chung, the trunk lid being closed. Then more steps to a car door. Then an engine roars. And he knows it's time to scoot, especially as the four black donuts are starting to roll. So he bolts in the direction his grandfather had fallen. Ignoring the knapsack of food, he passes it by and hurries on to the drift where his grandfather had disappeared. Assuming the part of a Saint Bernard, he begins rooting around through the snow, plowing furrows with his nose as he tries to locate his missing loved one. Finally, he comes upon a familiar foot and immediately begins hauling back on it. At last, the snowpack around his grandfather begins to crumble, his body to move, and like a frozen mummy coming out of its tomb, grandfather slides out on a slab. As soon as his face is free, Andy checks to see. Yes, a definite shade of blue. He is about to panic because he doesn't know how to perform mouth-to-mouth, mouse-to-mouse, when suddenly he notices twin white smokes issuing out of his grandfather's cold, wet nose, faint and quickly evaporating in the night air, yet they prove he's alive.
Oh, that's better.
When Grandfather Mouse opened his eyes and saw his grandson, he broke into one happy smile. But he wouldn't let Andy do anything more to assist him. Not yet. First, insisting he go and rescue their provisions, which Andy promptly did. Then brought back the knapsack and left it on the rim. As he waded back into the drift, he looked over and saw Uncle Bobo and Cousin Eeky hurrying to assist them. Then Andy felt his resentment melt and his animosity thaw, and in his heart he felt the surge of an urge to forgive them their trespasses. Alases, that is not what comes to passes, for all they did is run up and stand there, not offering any assistance at all, but merely watching while Andy floundered about and eventually got his grandfather out, pushing him out of the wallow and then clambering out himself.
"What are we going to do now?"
Andy said, putting the matter up for discussion. Uncle Bobo replied,
"Do? Why, do whatever you wish to do. I couldn't care less."
And with that, he gave Andy and his grandfather two quick shoves that sent them toppling over backwards into a fresh part of the drift. Then Bobo slung the knapsack on his back and said,
"So long, suckers. Gotta make tracks."
And with that, he hopped the high-tailing road heading east. Eeky was startled, too, and for a moment froze, undecided over what to do. It was one of those moments in everyone's life when they are confronted by a clear choice and have to decide which it is going to be, right or wrong, good or bad, devil versus Daniel Webster, Machiavelli versus Gandhi. Select any moral dilemma you'd like it to be, and chances are, if you are the person deciding and have been brought up among hoodlums and bums all your life and raised by a brute of a goon, there's a better than even chance on which side you're going to choose.
According to a report in today's Journal of Psychology, a full 89% of those whom researchers identify as artful dodgers grow up clinging to their Fagins.
Thus did Eeky the Meek decide to shake a leg in the direction of his fast-disappearing guardian. Meanwhile, mired in the drift, the two innocent victims were struggling to regain their balance. Andy was so angry he could spit nails. He wanted nothing more than to chase after them and reclaim their rightful property, but he couldn't risk leaving his grandfather behind. And, of course, this is exactly what Bobo had in mind, knowing no way could he give chase, not with his grandfather's precarious state,
not with him out here all alone, exposed to the elements and dangers unknown.
As soon as Andy extricated them for the second time from the wallow, he set to work figuring out what to do next. There was no way of getting Grandfather back inside the church to warm him up and start over again. The only other option was to seek alternative shelter. Andy looked about in all directions. The nearest possibility was a peaked roof just to the east, just beyond the hedgerow. He said to his guardian,
"Come on, Grandfather, we've got to get going. I think I see a place where we can find shelter for the night."
Grandfather Mouse struggled to rise, but Andy suddenly stopped him with an idea, saying,
"No, wait, wait, don't get up. Let's try this. Hang on to my tail. Use your paws, use your teeth if you have to, but hold on while I tow you behind. I'll pretend you're my bobsled. You pretend I'm your lifeline. And just hold on while I get us there."
Grandfather was cold. His teeth were chattering. He bobbed his head in agreement, and off they headed across the snow. Now let us adjust our perspective. Let us shift to another point of view. Let us ascend the church tower up above the dragon downspouts to the very top of the parapet. Look over the side, and what do you get? What you get is a scene straight out of David Lean. You recall the one I mean? That long lens shot from Dr. Zhivago of that snow-covered frozen Russian lake and the line of straggling soldiers on horseback, crookedly crossing in a single-file path? Well, our diminutive travelers are inscribing a similar script below, crossing the virgin snow. From up here, it looks like someone dragging a pencil tip over a frozen manuscript. But this time, instead of a line of many soldiers, there are only two stragglers below. Zoom in closer now, where you can actually see Andy pitched forward and powering like a draft horse, hauling a heavy sleigh, determined to get through, promising not to fail, and Grandfather Mouse is his sack of mail. Looking down, we see by true grit and sticking to it, he is gradually working his way across the field of snow. A two-party Donner Party, still with a long way to go. Trudging along, Andy can't help begrudging and reviewing the full extent of Uncle Bobo's treachery. It wasn't just his running off with their food. It was also the fact of him having stolen Andy's camouflage cloak as well. The one his mother had worked on so long to provide him some camouflage, if he ever had to venture outside, had served instead as the means for a couple of plunderers to run off with their supplies.
"Boy, wait until I tell her," Andy fumed. "When she hears about this, she is really going to..."
He broke off what he was saying.
"That is, if she hears about it. If I ever get a chance to tell her."
He let out a mournful sigh. All at once, out of the corner of his eye, Andy picks up a queer movement by moonlight. Something far off has taken flight, something big and something white, something that appears to have one long wing, which now bends in its middle and begins flapping like a V. There's a round face in the middle, too, like the kind you see engraved on the tops of old slate tombstones in Cape Cod colonial cemeteries. It looks like a flying human skull, affixed with a pair of wings,
identical to what's coming at them now, except these wings and this skull have a pair of legs that dangle too. It is traveling fast over open ground, making not the slightest sound as it slips through the still night air. It is all happening fast. As the monster closes in, it no longer flaps, but now is locked into a fixed wing glide, legs gimbaled forward, talons open wide. It is zeroing in on what Andy's towing behind him. Without a second's hesitation, Andy turns and lunges at the in-swooping monster, just as it is about to snatch his grandfather off the snow. And some say this marks the beginning of Andy's new opinion of himself. For lo and behold, truth be told, this snowy owl had not even noticed Andy was there at all. Just by wearing his birthday suit, invisible, Andy really was that hidden marshmallow in a field of snow.
Now, where Andy the albino is nowhere to be seen, Grandfather Mouse is just the opposite. He couldn't have stood out more starkly if he'd been a red, red rose on smooth white silk, or perhaps more apropos, a Tootsie Roll floating in a pan of milk.
The result was, when this flying fortress of white feathers arrives and reaches out to seize his grandfather, Andy the Mouse suddenly materializes out of nowhere and lunges up at the bird, and this, you may be sure, gets the startled bird's attention and conveys to it the sudden impression the snow itself is in motion and exploding all around it. Somehow its prey has been booby-trapped. This causes the enormous flying creature to veer off and shy away and give to its features an additional layer of surprise, like a palimpsest overriding what has always been a surprised-looking face. Surprise was also the currency of exchange when it came to Andy and his grandfather. They stared at each other with mouths open wide and eyes opened wide, as they calculated the enormity of what had just taken place. First, the main and basic thing. They were saved. They were alive. But more than that, it was also the fact that it was Andy who had saved them. And not just Andy, but Andy's glaring handicap, the one he had thought all along was his curse, which had just proven now it could be his ally as well. Well, when this wondrous realization hit Andy, it was like an emotional wallop, for it meant, for the first time in his life, he could feel different about himself, and not have to view his whiteness as the blightness others considered it to be. He would tell his grandfather about this later, but right now, as he resumed their exodus across the snow, Andy the albino was thinking to himself,
"Gosh, what do you know about that? I guess that was a pretty big surprise, and a good one at that. But wait, Grandfather Mouse always says, 'Analyze, Andy. Look for the lesson in everything that happens to you.' So what lesson should I derive from this? Well, I suppose, let's say, here goes, that we should always be grateful for all favors sent, even those we tend to view as punishments. And don't complain nor rue the day because some force we can't name has chosen to turn us out in a particular way. Because really, I mean, come on, who is to say who's handicapped and who's not?"
Crossing a softened patch of snow, Andy re-encountered the footsteps of Eeky and Uncle Bobo, and for a while he followed in their already partially broken trail.
Ice.
Trudging along.
"Can I have some ice, please?"
Trudging along, he watched their footprints unscroll like a pattern of wallpaper. Repetitive casts of animal tracks, four sets of paws and a tail like a rat's. A big fat rat's dragging tail.
It's a rat.
It's a rat.
It's a rat. It's a rat.
Then, since their path began to angle more northward around the hill, and Andy still wanted them to reach shelter quickly, he angled off and headed for the roof on the other side of the hedgerow. Coming out the other side and seeing what the peaked roof was fastened to, a cedar-shaped boathouse or garage. Whichever it was, it looked mighty inviting compared to the alternative of surviving out of doors. Arriving around by its front, they had no trouble slipping under its twin bay doors that shared a horizontal row of square window panes. They entered upon a frozen domain. The oyster shell driveway continued into the space inside, which was unheated, but at least they were out of the snow and out of the wind should it decide to blow. Plus, they were no longer risking exposure to predators under the bright moonlight. As they moved towards the rear of the garage, it grew darker fast. Both mice had to shift to sniffing to know what they were encountering.
Gasoline? Motor oil? Fertilizer? Musty boat cushions? Potting soil?
At the very back, they came upon a moldering bale of hay.
This will do,
Andy said. At least it was some place Grandfather could lay his head, and some place he'd be relatively safe and dry, with Andy standing guard nearby.
Grandfather, lay down now and get some rest, while I take the first watch.
Grandfather tried to protest. No, let me, he started to say. But he had lost the will to resist. Still on his feet, but half asleep, he mumbled as he crumbled. You're right. Call it a day. And like the tree that falls in the forest, he was asleep in the arms of Morpheus before his head had hit the hay. Son of a gun. There is a foghorn. Huh. I hear it now for sure. You hear that, Andy? You hear that, Andy? Asleep. Good. Good. And here comes another delivery of ice cream.